Hi, I'm Dmytro Švets, your host at the Start Global Insights, where I interview experts from different countries about local business secrets and international expansion experience.
In today's conversation, I will talk about the very interesting topic devoted to understanding other cultures, but even more deep about the trust building issues. And to go deeper into this topic, I invited my guest, Marina Starodubska. She is the author of the book Understanding Ukrainians, Cross-Cultural Perspective, and she is also a cross-cultural interaction consultant and Kyiv Mohyla Business School adjunct professor. Hi, Marina, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Marina, can we talk about the trust issue in general? Like, what is the anatomy of trust? What are the main ingredients of trust?
Right. Now, if you're an exporter and you're looking at markets to enter with your product or service, one of the key things to look at is how generalized trust is structured. Generalized trust is the ratio of trust to in-group to trust to out-group. In-group is people I know, my family, my friends, my colleagues. Out-group is people from the street.
Okay.
Usually, in a culture, level of trust to in-group is higher than level of trust to out-group. But the question is, how much higher?
Mm-hmm. So that means that I trust more to those people that I know, yeah, versus those people that I don't know.
Yes, which is natural and expected, but let's take some countries popular amongst Ukrainian businesses to enter with their products. Let's take United States.
Okay.
It is a very lucrative market. It's big. There's funding. There's perspective. Demand is very high. Range of products and services in demand is very broad. But generalized trust in the United States is 37%.
Which means that they, like 37% of people trust to outer group or...
37% of population say, generally, people around me can be trusted.
Okay.
Which is not a high number.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for instance, Germany, West Germany, has generalized trust of 45%.
Mm-hmm.
Norway, Finland have generalized trust of over 65%.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a thing called trust radius. How wide is the circle of people which potentially one can trust?
Mm-hmm.
And in the United States, the trust radius is 50%, which means it's quite wide. So yes, Americans may be not very trustful at the beginning, but you can take certain steps and the trust circle will open.
Mm-hmm. So you have like more chances to get this trust within some time of cooperation. Okay.
Yes. Let's take China. Level of generalized trust is 64%, almost twice the percentage of the US. But China's trust radius is 25% and US is 50%,
mm-hmm.
which means that radius-adjusted trust in China is lower in the US, even though the original indicator is high, which means in China, it's going to take you a lot more time, a lot more effort, and a lot more information.
To get in this circle, yes? To get in this circle, they trust.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The importance of trust, if you're an exporter, there are five aspects of it. First, it defines your time to market. Because if it takes you half a year to only get to pre-cooperation talks in China, in the United States, you can potentially, given that your product is in demand, achieve a lot more in comparable terms. Second, format of cooperation. If we're talking about countries like Romania, Poland, Moldova, Italy, Turkey, Egypt, countries where Ukrainian businesses have interest, all of these cultures are highly relationship oriented, which means there is no way you can gain trust through correspondence. You need to go there. you need to meet people. You need to socialize with people.
That's interesting, because when I consult companies to go abroad and somebody is asking me if I can help them with, for example, the Gulf area, yeah, and I say that I don't know how to build trust there, but I heard that there is a saying that you need 1 year to drink tea with these people first to get into their circle and only then start talking business. But on the other hand, to get into the Swedish trust circle took me also a lot of time. So at minimum like half a year. And they look at your actions, not words. Yeah. So they like trust you at the beginning, but then you should prove that you are okay and you can be trusted in the future.
That is very true. And the third aspect of looking at trust is the grounds. What is the trust built on? Like you said, in high trust societies, Scandinavia, Baltic states, you have some advanced trust. So they basically loan you some trust at the beginning and watch you act. And if you do not drop that ball, the trust goes upward from there. But when we're talking about Middle East, Latin America, Eastern Europe, Central Europe, Asia, Southeast Asia, Africa, in this region, trust is not advanced. You don't get the loan of trust before cooperation. You need to actually spend some physical time, physical presence, attention, resources, energy to foster this initial trust. And not only that, the fourth aspect of the five about trust is rank sensitivity. If you are going to Norway, Estonia, again, Denmark, you can easily be a leader of a department, or you can be a high-level specialist to establish the first contact.
Yeah.
But if you're going anywhere southward or eastward, you better be founder. Or you better be CEO if you want any kind of talks to happen. So rank sensitivity, in other words, power distance. How much tolerance there is to inequality in position, privilege, status, autonomy, authority, things like that. So Scandinavia and Baltic states have low power distance, which means diagonal communication between people of different ranks is possible. But if you're talking about Asia, Africa, Eastern Europe, Balkans,
Ukraine included,
exactly. Our power distance, colleagues, is among the highest in the world. It's 95 out of 120. For reference, Malaysia's power distance is 100.
Okay.
So ours is very high. So in countries, cultures like these, unless you possess a certain rank, no one talks to you, seriously. And the last aspect of trust is whether trust is transiable or not. Let's say you went to Estonia as a representative of your company. You had some talks. You brought back some contacts. Next time your colleague goes, in flat power distance cultures, your colleague will be met as someone whom they kind of already know through you, through your company. But in higher power distance cultures, that's going to be an entire new conversation. An entirely new relationship, because trust isn't transient.
Okay, so if for example, director of the company went to Middle East and then agreed to some deal, and then they sent the manager of department. So this manager of department will need to build everything from scratch.
That manager of the department will have to build their own relationship with the effective manager of department in the Middle East from scratch. Talking is one thing, trusting is entirely the other.
Okay. I also met this situation when I was working with Caucasian region, with Azerbaijan, for example. There was another thing about the trust they show and the real trust behind what they talk. Like everybody are very hospitable. They invite you to drink some wine, tea, coffee, eat some food, and they are so open-hearted and promise almost everything that you would like to get. But then it appears that it was like one part of hospitality, and then the real issue happens afterwards. Yeah, so you still need to go into this communication and conversation in an informal way. Mm-hmm. And you can feel that trust is there already, like from the beginning. Like you came and you got this trust. But in reality, it took me, I don't know, 1 year maybe, to build real bonds with people and make them speak freely with me, not hiding something, like they're just expressing their thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a saying called social norms. Social norms are what's okay and not okay to do in a certain culture. The same social norm in different cultures may have different meaning, different timing, and different application. Let's take it in the Caucasus. Hospitality is a matter of politeness. If you do not treat your potential partner at a good restaurant, you don't receive them well in a good hotel, you're plain rude. This is politeness. It has nothing to do with business or lack thereof. Now let's take Ukraine, which you and I represent. In Ukraine, hospitality is a product of trust. For a Ukrainian to treat somebody at home or to accompany somebody to a restaurant, usually it happens after some kind of communication, some kind of interaction happens. So to us, hospitality is a gift, a token of my trust to you. So same norm, different timing, different application, different meaning. Same goes for emotions. Like what you said, there are cultures which are neutral, Germany, United States, Austria, China, and there are cultures which are affective with an A, Ukraine, Romania, Moldova, Italy,
Spain.
Turkey, Spain, exactly. So neutral cultures are those where, in professional context, emotions should be controlled. So, if you're holding negotiations with your German, Austrian, Estonian partners, Danish, Norwegian, Finnish, and you lose your temper, or you express frustration in an overly emotional manner, you just ruined your negotiation. It doesn't matter how passionate you are, emoting too much in a serious context in cultures like these is perceived as lack of professionalism. Because emotion should be controlled.
Maybe Japan is the top in this rank, yeah?
Yes, Japan is one of the most neutral cultures in that sense. Now, if we're talking about affective cultures, now affective cultures use emotion as a way to signal about your trust, about your willingness to cooperate, about the connection being established, and the degree of that emotion expression differs. So in affective cultures, if you're not emoting, that is strange. You may be perceived as disinterested. You
may be perceived as suspicious,
distracted, aloof. So when we're talking about reading of the emotions and behaviors of representatives of different cultures, it doesn't hurt to know what that symbolizes in that specific culture.
Are there any like basic rules if you did not spend time or invested your time in understanding the culture beforehand. Are there some simple rules that you should consider talking with any culture in the world, not to fail completely?
Well, first, consider high trust, low trust. There are sociology surveys nationally in every country, so this information is very easy to obtain.
Hmm. By the way, I have here one book. This your book. Yeah. So this is exactly the book about how to understand Ukrainians. And you have here the source of data about trust. Yeah, this high-low trust. This is kind of a quadrant. Yeah, so I saw it here. Yeah, this one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So first, high trust, low trust. Mm-hmm. Second, power distance. How important it is to be of the same rank. How important titles are. How important it is to have several meetings with different people to ensure that everyone is on board. Third one is risk aversion or risk proneness, called uncertainty avoidance. If a culture is risk averse, Ukraine, Germany, Turkey, Egypt, Moldova, Romania, in a risk averse culture, it's a big mistake to offer to a client something, some solution that's completely new, untested. You'll be the first. Mm-hmm. You're literally shooting yourself in the foot there. Mm-hmm. But in more risk-prone cultures, Australia, Israel, United States, Netherlands, it could actually be a good thing. So if you look at these three things, you can make your life a little bit easier. But again, reading on some cultural aspects is always a good idea. And luckily, this information is highly available in open sources.
From one hand, yes. But from another hand, until I actually met you in the business school where we both teach, I have been also reading this, like cultural issues or cultural peculiarities, business cultural peculiarities. And in most cases, it is so stereotypic and so generalized. Yeah, so that it won't help. It's like in any case in Japan, if you are in Japan, in any case, you should not forget to give your business card with two hands. This is the most important issue that you should remember when going to Japan. So this is the most common sources that I've met. Are there any other sources that people can have a look at quickly and get this information?
Of course. There are two different things. There's protocol, diplomatic protocol, with what hands, how many degrees of a bow. This is protocol. Now, and there's cross-cultural interaction. Cross-cultural interaction explains why two hands, and cross-cultural interaction is a science that has several authors. In Ukraine, it's me. Outside of Ukraine, in the global arena, you have Geert Hofstede, von Strombenars, Michel Gelfand, Edward Hall, Shalom Schwartz, Engelhardt, Welzel, Newton. If you know what World Value Survey is, it's one of the biggest cross-cultural surveys on the planet. So if you read any of these sources or ask ChatGPT to pull together some summary for you based on peer-reviewed publications, then you will definitely have yourself a good basic understanding, evidence-based, what the culture is about.
Do you have any typical mistakes that people do when they start to communicate with new culture and they have this things that they do not correctly?
I do. If you're talking about Ukrainian companies trying to enter foreign market, so five mistakes. Mistake number one, communication that is too straightforward, too judgmental, and overly sarcastic. Bluntness and judgmental approach. Now, when I say judgmental approach is when you use a lot of adjectives, ineffective, unacceptable, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ukraine is very confrontational. in the way we discuss, in the way we deal. Now, confrontational means I express my frustration, dissatisfaction, and refusal bluntly and straight to your face. Most, absolute majority of cultures in the world are not like that. So that's first mistake. No sarcasm. There is a very limited culture, a number of cultures in the world, which actually allow sarcasm in serious business dealings. Absolute minority. So second mistake, assuming everybody is like you. Assuming everybody, I mean, I believe something my colleagues in Japan, Azerbaijan, Estonia, or US will believe something, the same thing. No.
That's actually the same mistake when people say that this product will be, this need will be in the place in the market because I need this. Yeah, so this is the same mistake by startups and product developers.
So kind of try to stand in your vis-a-vis shoes from another culture and look at your company, at your product with their eyes. Three, everybody will overwork because I tell them to. In Ukraine, overworking is a way to show your dedication. And it's an element of prestige. You can only be respected as a professional if you overwork significantly. Now, that's a problem in the European Union, which has a directive about work-life balance. So if you're having teams hiring anywhere, Poland, Romania, Czechia, Austria, Germany, forget it. Not only overtime is very costly, it actually has to be agreed upon. Third mistake is assuming that you know best and you do not need local expertise. Always, always hire local consultants. Always. Because you will never be able to gauge the granular nuances of a product demand in a competitive market. If you're entering a market where you are the second provider, by all means, make all mistakes you like.
With unique product, and innovative, unique product that everybody needs.
But if you're entering the United States, the most competitive market in the world, you better have local expertise. Because failure is just too costly.
By the way, how different are the states of the United States?
Should you
consider the different cultures within the country?
Very. United States is actually 50 subcultures.
50.
It's not one culture. It's 50 states.
It's 50. Like 50 states, yeah.
It's 50 subcultures. It's not one culture. And lastly, invest time in trust building and communication. Absolute minority of cultures operate on the premise, let's get straight to business, let's not.
Disregarding the country. So this is kind of a universal rule. Yeah, so invest time in trust building and communication.
The question is how much time? Two weeks, a month, or half a year, but invest. Don't forget, cooperation is not built on your product alone. Cooperation is built on mutually beneficial partnership between your company and your vis-a-vis company.
And even, I would say, humans, like people from one company and another company. Because in my experience, I have seen a lot of cases when the decision was made not because of the product or the company, but because I liked the other guy. So it's like one director is okay with the other one. And they have like the similar values and point of views and they like each other. So then the business will go, even if the product is not that good that was expected. By the way, when I was talking to Danes, they say that they are almost that much direct and open in, and also in with this black humor as Ukrainians. And they like similar to us with this notion of directness and sarcasm, I would say as well.
There are different types of directness. Danes are indeed direct, and they appreciate a good sarcasm. But direct, factually direct, and judgmental direct are different direct. It's one thing to say, Marina, could you be any later with your report?
Mm-hmm.
That's factual, sarcastic, right? But if I say, Marina, why are you so irresponsible? Can't you see your report is not still in? This is judgmental direct. Yeah. So there are different types of direct. Ukrainians are judgmental direct.
Mm-hmm.
Danes, Norwegians, Finns, Germans gravitate.
Dutch is one.
Dutch, yes, toward factual direct. No judgment, fact, observation.
Mm-hmm. What are the, maybe the last question to you, pre-last question to you. Mm-hmm. From your experience and your opinion, what are the regions of the world that are most easy to enter and understand and to integrate in the culture?
You know, my philosophy in intercultural communication is there is no easy.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the most familiar, in a sense, similar culture to Ukrainians are Colombia and Argentina.
True.
Not even Europe, Colombia and Argentina.
Yeah, true.
However, having said that, even though we have a lot of similarities, there is a lot of nuances and uniquenesses. Mm-hmm. So I always urge clients, do not think in terms which region is easier to enter. Because, you know, I can make less effort, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Like everybody from Ukraine was thinking that Poland is the most closest to us culturally and mentally market. We should go there.
Even though Poland and Ukraine have a lot of historic period where they were intertwined and there are quite a bit of similarities, Poland is very different. Well,
exactly.
First of all, it's an individualist society and we're highly collectivist, you know. Don't think. But don't think about in terms of easy, yes? Think mm-hmm. about cost and benefit of bridging the cultural distance. Because the more differences there are in approaches to motivation, management, other things, the more it will cost to re-engineer your process. So, mm-hmm. if the market is highly lucrative, then probably it is worth attempting. But if you're not sure about the perspectives of your product or service in a respective market, and the cultural distance is high, so mm-hmm. additional investment will be necessary, maybe take a little more time to weigh the cost benefit. So my advice, don't look for easy. Look for cost-benefit analysis because bridging cultural divide is an investment.
Actually, you have answered my last question about the last advice that you would give to our audience within this question as well. So, in fact, what you are saying is that in any case, you will need to study the other culture. Yeah. In any case, you will need to invest some resources in building trust and communication, and in any case, you will need time to get trusted. Yeah, and in some cases, it is quicker and easier, maybe to some extent. And what is the most important that you will need, or you will use different tools depending on the culture, how to get this trust and start your sales within this country. Because, for example, in my experience now, I'm promoting my educational programs, the Start Global Education, towards Nordic Europe. And even though I have contacts there, I have partners there, I still cannot go directly to consumers because they do not trust me. They do not know me. And in this case, I can borrow this trust from local associations or local partnership that they will use then to build trust. And in other countries, like you said, in Middle East, it is totally different story. So every time you will need to build your own trust connections with this company. Yeah. So in any case, you need to study, you need to understand the other cultures, and this will be a very good base for you to not make too much mistake, because in any case, you will do these mistakes when you will enter new company or start communication with new culture. Great. Thanks, Marina. That was, yeah. I think, only the like opening. Yeah, the small part of what the intercultural communication is. And I have so many questions more, but unfortunately, we don't have too much time for this episode. But I hope that you will come back, and probably we will tell more about other cultures to our listeners.
Thank you for having me. If you'd like to have me again, I'll be glad to share some more things.
Special thanks to all listeners who made it so far. And if you'd like this episode and you would like to get more insights on international expansion, please subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss the next episode.